we started looking at last time? It's a long time ago, isn't it?
What's the pastor's job?
Huh?
What's the pastor's job?
Yeah. And we were kind of, or at least I was using the different titles or names that the God has given to be able to describe that, and maybe bear out the different aspects that we see of a bishop, the pastor, and who he's supposed to be. And you know, one of the things that gets so diluted in all this, first and foremost, who is the pastor?
Messenger.
Okay, messenger.
The under shepherd.
Under shepherd.
The angel of the church.
Angel of.
Overseer.
Overseer.
Servant of God.
This is like
huh?
a big
servant
question.
Of God.
Servant of God. How about a church member?
Okay.
Yeah. But we want to put him somewhere, like he's above every other church member. Right? Is that pastor above, beyond any aspect of any other church member? Could he sin like any other church member? Could he have weaknesses like any other church member? Could he have fleshly problems like any other church member? And as we go through this then, you and I have to think about, okay, we're looking at what God has as responsibilities, requirements for that individual. But then hopefully we realize, knowing as we look at this, we realize that's just God called a church member to this office, right? And so it's not that all of a sudden all those things that we all as in the flesh have to deal with were just God melted those away out of his life. So now he can be this individual, right? He has to be able to struggle hard to keep his eyes upon Christ, right? Hebrews 12:2, looking unto Jesus. Didn't Paul say that he had to fight to keep his body under subjection, a warfare? So as church members, hopefully, you know, maybe you're not a pastor, you're not called to be that, you still have to realize that this is a fight that you ought to be fighting, right? And you may never be called to be a bishop, but as we look at this, maybe you can get an appreciation of what that office holds, not the man. What the office holds, so that that office can be lifted up to that proper position, right? Respect, reverence for the office work of that, because the Lord puts it there. We looked at last time, I think, I don't know where we left off, but we looked at bishop, the word bishop, 1 Timothy 3:1 and 2, and how that really speaks of kind of the administrative work of that office and responsibilities, and that's towards and with the people. There's another aspect of that we'll get to maybe tonight, probably tomorrow. And then we looked at pastor, Ephesians 4:11, and I won't go over all the words again. Shepherd is used a lot to describe when they're talking about a pastor, and it really talks about that relationship to the people, to the flock, right? And denotes the care, the concern, the well-being. And ultimately, all that ties up with love, right? How can you be like David and go after the sheep that's in the mouth of the lion or the paw of the bear and not have a love, right? You have to have a greater concern for that sheep than you do your own well-being to be able to be that kind of and have that kind of relationship. And so you know, and maybe I say this too much, you know, there is a difference that a pastor, you know, may have in a love and concern, but should it be? Shouldn't, and isn't the church commanded to have that love one toward another? Yes. Right? Do you ever see church members that don't have that love one towards another? Mm-hmm. That aren't as concerned for the welfare of another church member as they are for themselves? That don't rejoice when they rejoice or sorrowful when they're sorrowful? They don't have that within them. At least they don't display it. And then point it to me. Do I have those attitudes? Do I have those thoughts? Is a pastor above not having the love that he should have for the flock or for a member of that flock? Can a pastor get caught up in that? Or are they, you know what, good riddance? Be pretty easy to do, right? I've had to fight myself. There were some individuals that I knew, man. Service is going to be so much easier now, so much nicer now. But you know what? You got to temper that, because you better have that love for that member, that individual, because you're going to answer for that. Mm-hmm. And you're going to give an account for that soul. And you better have fought and battle all you can battle to get them to where they could be a functioning member of that body, right? So, but these, hopefully we're seeing, these are all struggles that we're going to have. So it speaks of that relationship, pastor. And I think we also talk about elder as well. Brother Christian.
I mean, 1 Corinthians 12 brings it out that, you know, we can't say that we don't have a need of somebody else. We all have a part in the body, and we all have that office that we need to fulfill. Some people have, you know, pastors, and we have the devotionals and the mm-hmm. song leaders. But some people just need to be students so they can be ready for that office that God has called them towards.
Absolutely.
And so we can't discount anybody.
No, that's absolutely right. I think we left off here with elder, and you know, it is used sometimes just with the older, but a lot of times it is speaking with that spiritual elder, that pastor and their responsibility, and it does speak of the maturity, right, that he's supposed to have. What is 1 Timothy? What is one of the qualifications of that pastor? What does it say there?
Not a novice.
Right? Not a novice. And that really speaks of this being an elder, whatever. He may be, you know, you think about Timothy, as that young pastor, was he an elder as a young man?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had to be, right? Or if he wasn't, he shouldn't have been put in the office.
Exactly.
Right? So that elder speaks of the spiritual maturity that he has to have to be able to fulfill that work. And no man should have hands laid upon him until that spiritual maturity is seen. Age really doesn't have a lot to do with that. Of course, it has some. You know, it's hard to have any spiritual maturity if you don't have any physical maturity, right, in that sense. If you can't rein in and control the emotions and everything else, how are you going to, you know, lead a spiritually mature life? So there is some that has to play into that. But for the main, that's speaking of, are they spiritually mature? Now, it's easy to say those things, but what does it mean? What does spiritual maturity look like?
I think 1 Timothy 3.
Okay.
That's what it looks like.
But how would we recognize that? Both in the pros section and the cons section, what would spiritual maturity how is that reflected?
You're going to see it in the actions.
Okay. You're going to see it in the actions. What else, Brother Daniel?
Well, I mean, it probably will manifest a lot of different ways, but, you know, the first one that comes to mind is going back to this 1 Timothy chapter 3 is, you talk to an individual and maybe you give them a little brag, saying, hey, how good you are. And that an elder will take that and temper that and realize that I'm not that great, it's not that big of a deal, but maybe one who is not mature, not an elder, oh yeah, look at me, yeah, I'm doing a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
And that will come out, look how good I am. Mm-hmm. I get that just one aspect, but probably many other ways that it would manifest.
It is.
That's one of those first things that they think
about. And that's a good one. And you think about what Jesus spoke of to the multitude and to his own disciples, you know, when he was even pointing to John the Baptist, right? What did you go out there to see? What was his reference? Did you expect, you know, to see a reed shaking in the wind? A man uncertain of what he believed in? No stability, right? He even talked about that in the New Testament through Paul, right? That we be not tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. So there better be some stability. That church is looking for that man to have stability, to have a foundation that, well, this is what the truth says, and as they go through the scriptures, they teach these things, and that they're not going to be swayed by somebody slick coming down the road, or another pastor or preacher that can sway them from that conviction. And it's not about just following a false doctrine. What if it's just about overlooking? Yeah.
Well, with that, you know, you're talking about spiritual maturity. So we're gonna hit this tomorrow. The Bible talks about multitude of counselors that are saved. And that counsel is the word of God. And that's mm-hmm. people in your life that will give you the word of God. And so sometimes I think some spiritual maturity may be shown or realized or demonstrated when that happens, and you're able to see now through the counsel of the Word of God and you know, brethren in your life that are directing that. It's like, I need to readjust.
Mm-hmm.
And then you admit, I need to readjust.
Yep.
That's spiritual maturity.
Yep.
Or that's coming to a you know, being wrong is okay. It's, if you admit that you're wrong or see you're wrong or say, you know, I can be better. I can be better at this than whatever this is.
Yep.
That's you know, that's a sense of understanding that spiritual maturity.
Yep. The danger is when you're not wrong.
Exactly. Never.
Yeah. Right? Because when is that possible?
Yeah.
For any individual. But Trent?
You're going to 1 Peter 5.
What's that?
Were you going to 1 Peter 5?
I will, but not right now. Okay. So if you want to go to there and have make point, absolutely.
You were asking about, you know, kind of characteristics of the elder and everything like that. There's 1 Peter 5, feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind, either as being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, at least in my life, I can see what individuals are putting on.
Mm-hmm.
They're up there for a show. They're up there to be seen of men.
Yep.
Not doing it for the correct reasons. They're not willingly doing it to be an example for the flock.
Yep.
They're doing it to be seen of men. And we know through the scriptures that's going to be the reward overall.
Yes.
But you can truly see an individual who's humble. I think there it keeps on going on later on in chapter 5, they're being humble.
Mm-hmm.
You can see an individual who is being humble. You can see that with your own eyes.
Yep.
So, I mean, that would be another characteristic.
Absolutely. And so, I was going to make Brother talking to Brother Crabtree today, and I told him, I said, man, that was pretty profound, you know, what you just said there. And I said, very simple, but we don't get this taught enough as we should. That, you know, that young preacher who, you know, becomes a bishop, right, ordained, and he gets on the field and does a work, the spiritual maturity is going to be what he does. Meaning, is he going to get in there and build and strengthen and nourish that church and do the work for that local body right there? Or is his concern going to be more about other things, making a name, doing these things? We have to realize that the spiritual maturity that God has given us is God has a bishop to be an overseer of a flock. Right? But what is that flock? That is that local, visible assembly that he's now a member of. That is his responsibility. Mm-hmm. Right? We have a wonderful thing in a fellowship of churches, right? That's why we have this here tonight. But what is this without that local visible church? And if that local visible church isn't healthy or as it should be and being led as it should be, what will the work become? Mm-hmm. What will the fellowshipping churches become? Right? That has kind of been lost by the wayside. We're so concerned with the fellowship or with this, with that. But you know what? If you just worry about the church that you're pastoring and deal with that church, everything else will kind of fall into place. Everything else will be okay, the Christian.
I think of, you know, Galatians 6, just jump on to Brother Trent. Galatians 6, 3 through like 7. But he says, for a man thinking of himself to be something when he is nothing, he is, you know, he deceiving himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he be trusting himself alone and not another. Right? For every man shall bear his own burden. And then he goes on to say, God's not mocked. But, I mean, we're not doing it, you know, to show. You know, it's not for show. It's not like religion out there. Who's like, look at me, I'm a good person.
Mm-hmm.
I gave my shirt off my back. No, I do this for Jesus Christ, for the love of Jesus Christ.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
I think that's mature.
Yeah. It is, absolutely, Brother Trent.
I think it goes back to the process that you started off with in the beginning of the year. How does the Lord see us? How does God see us? He sees us from the inside out. He doesn't see us from the outside in. So having that wisdom and the humbleness to realize, well, I got to deal with what's going on inside instead of what's going on outside, I would kind of say that's a pretty good characteristic of an elder.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. First Timothy, the 5th chapter, verse 17. I don't want to focus on the make sure that he's taking care of part of it. But I want to look at just that first part. Let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in word and doctrine, who rule well. The elders, spiritually mature, that rule well. Okay? And so we break that down, right? To rule means what?
Manage.
To dictate? Force?
Manage.
Well, what does manage mean?
It means to help.
To manipulate?
Huh?
Go ahead. I'm going to keep hitting you with it.
That's what I'm waiting for you to just jump on. To cultivate, to allow an individual to grow and to help and to guide in the right direction, and to help them flourish in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the whole church to manage or to steer the whole church in the right direction.
Yeah.
Much of it is just allowing them to grow, giving them the space and the direction, and this is the right way to go.
Yep, yep.
So what we don't like to do that, sometimes you manipulate the topic, the conversation, the direction, to get that outcome so they might see it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think you should ever manipulate to get your way, but we gotta think what our path is, is what God wants. Sometimes, you know, people go down a certain thing or they're directed or you're dealing with a certain thing and you're like, okay, so this is, and then you begin to hopefully, let's just use that word, you're manipulating the topic, the point, the conversation to make them maybe realize this is not the direction I need to go.
Yeah. And I would
not
say
manipulate is not the right word, but
you're guiding.
Dictating.
Yes. You're guiding them down that road. I think of, you know, manipulate how a wife leads the home. Most of the time it's through manipulation, right? She's not going to outright say this is what we're doing, whatever. But if she's going to lead them, you can tell she's going to do it through manipulation, right? A pastor shouldn't behave that way, right? A pastor should be out front, open with what it is, guide them in that sense that, yes, they may not receive, quote, this doctrine, they're not going to be ready for it, so you're going to guide them using these doctrines. You're going to get them there to that point you want, but you're going to use these different means and methods, right? Brother Nathan.
Back to that 1 Timothy 3, 5, for if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? And so there's that synonymous action, office, if you will, of a man ruling his house, caring for the church. It's the same thing. and it's all boils down to what we've been talking about. You're leading them to that bridal relationship mm-hmm. for the Lord. Because mm-hmm. all the while, Acts 20:28 has been one of the verses that have stuck with me. That flock of God, he purchased with his own blood. And so you better take heed, because he gave you oversight of that church. That's his, that he bought with his blood.
Yep.
So you got to take care of her, that she becomes that holy, unblameable, without spot and wrinkle bride of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Did I miss any? Brother Crabtree.
Lord's work is totally volunteer. And the preacher's job is, and he stole my funding. Use my verse. But it's the care for that
mm-hmm.
flock.
Mm-hmm.
He liked them to a flock. And an under shepherd cares for that flock. And the shepherd cares.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so sometimes we forget. And we want to command, that we want to, you know, I don't like manipulative. What we have to do is we have to feed them and care for them and take care of them and help them to volunteer
mm-hmm.
to do the work of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You start pushing and forcing, you won't get anything out of it. They won't let you know that, but in their own heart and mind, they'll say, you got to tell me what to do.
Yep.
You know, you have to get people to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
You do that by feeding them on the word and by setting the example and by working with them and teaching them and getting them to see the need to go forward and to do the things that are necessary. For a church to stand for truth and contend for the faith, you've got to get them to see the need.
Mm-hmm.
That's a preacher's job. You don't do it with a whip, and you don't do it with outsmarting them and conning them into things. You guide them.
Yep. And sometimes I think about that in that same sense. Thinking back with even David, you know, an example that we have there in the picture. And I don't want to make this sound bad as a mock on church, because it's not. But sometimes you see that body and you realize, man, they're not ready for this.
Yeah.
You know, they can't handle this, what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where David was. He, you know, as that lion came, hey, they're not ready for this. So he had to step in. Right? He had to kind of take charge of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And a pastor has to be willing to be able to recognize that. Number one, he better know that body enough to know, you know, the real dangers and what kind of level of danger this is. And if they're not ready, then there may not be time enough to teach. You just got to step in and say, this is what it says, we're going to make the stand, and give them that backbone to stand at that time. And then as long to it, then you're teaching, you're training, you're showing. But, you know, I found, you know, dealing with this, you deal with individuals. Well, I tried to teach them, I tried to share with them, and this is what they decide. So what can I do? You know, this is the path they follow. This is the choice they made. So what could I do? Sometimes that pastor, if they don't realize the threat that they are, that pastor has to take the oversight. That's what that really means. That oversight is, okay, here's the decision. This is what God said we have to do. I know we don't understand this right now, but we have to make this decision, or we're not following God. And maybe, we'll do some teaching, training on it, but right now, this is a decision that has to be made. That's the oversight. Not that they're leading and dictating, but sometimes that pastor has to put himself into that position where, okay, this is what the Bible says. And prayerfully, that flock will lead, right? And follow that leadership, so that they can make that right decision. And maybe they don't, and maybe it takes time for them to, but that pastor better not be a reed shaking in the wind. He better not cave in certain situations like that. Brother Doug, on the other hand.
Well, 1 Timothy 4, I turned to you when you were asking about even the age. That's where the statement's made, let no man despise thy youth.
Mm-hmm.
But in verses right above that, in verse 6, nourished up in the words of faith and of good doctrine whereunto thou hast attained. There's the positive. But right afterward, sometimes there needs to be the negative. But refuse profane and old wives' fables and exercise thyself rather unto godliness.
Yep.
You may be even accused sometimes of controlling or doing more than. and I agree wholeheartedly with everything that's been said. It's not manipulation, but because you're taking the oversight and watching out for the flock and for the Lord's heritage, you're the one that has to sometimes make statements and rebuke or to bring things out that are unpleasant.
Yep. Yep. You know, you think about sometimes, I guess you have to be the one standing up in a business meeting or leading and dealing with the situation, and you can see the faces of the men, and that, you know, there's some that want to speak, but they're afraid to speak. They want to, you know, share, you know, what they see the Bible teach, but they're not quite certain. Well, that's when that pastor has to be able to make that okay, right? To maybe share it, and then, well, yeah, that's exactly what I want to say, but they're afraid. They didn't want to kind of stick their neck out there to kind of profess that, right? Or to make that stand. Well, that pastor has to be willing to do so. Because that, and I find this is my frustration I'm speaking about. You know, sometimes you sit back there and you just wait. And I'm not taking another step, right? I'm not going to do anything else until the body does it. Well, that's not a right attitude that I've come to, you know, understand of myself. That if I'm waiting for them, I have to know in my heart, they're just hesitant. It doesn't mean they don't believe it, don't know it, but most of the time they're just hesitant, right? They don't have that get up in front and lead the charge type of attitude, and maybe they need that pastor to be able to help them in that. So you have to make that decision.
And but Nathan, I'm sorry, in the same passage, being the example.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
If someone's waiting for somebody else to lead, that's what the pastor's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I guess that's kind of the question statement is, well, what's wrong with that? For instance, maybe there's a church member that hasn't been in church for a while and nobody's saying anything, and you just calmly say, hey, church, we need to start praying about this because we've got church members here that are rejecting the way, and you know, there's obvious reasons why this is going on. This church needs to do something about it.
Yep.
And you wait for the awkward silence to move on, and you move on. And maybe the next service you say it again.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that?
Mm-hmm. And absolutely.
Know, that's not manipulation or anything, but that's definitely letting the church know, hey, you've got an obligation here.
Yep.
And I'm not the dictator, so we need to get rolling on what we're doing.
Exactly. And while you're doing and giving that space, you're teaching.
You're teaching them.
Exactly. Exactly. Because some may, you know, very well know what to do. Some may not.
Yeah.
And you want it to be, you know, that unity of the faith. You want it to be a church action or inaction, and not these people action or inaction,
well,
right?
You want the church to think about these things and have them in the forefront of their mind, because it could be, you know, more of the positive things like we just recently did an evangelistic outreach. You know, it took a while to talk to the church and get them thinking about it and talking about it and bringing it up before somebody raised their hand, you know? And
yep.
Just trying to guide them in that, what is your mind frame? What are we thinking about daily? And are we looking to the Lord and all these things? And listen, you and I have been part of New Testament church for a long time. It's old hat, not to everybody else. Yep,
exactly.
They don't know how this thing gets kickstarted.
Exactly. You know, one of the things I try and keep in mind is, you know, the Lord tried to speak to the local churches in this respect. We've talked to the Church of Corinth, and he says, man, you're not understanding how to judge, and you're going before the courts of this land. Yeah. And then what was his statement to that church? Know ye not that ye shall what?
Judge.
So what's the big deal about not everybody on the same page about the doctrines? That we don't have a unity of the faith. Who's going to judge the angels? The pastors?
The church.
The body. Well, what are you going to judge? How are you going to judge? With what judgment shall you meet? Right? So that church has to, you know, have that constant feeding and know the doctrines of the Lord. Because guess what? One day, that bride, Brother Dixon talking about that bride, one day, that bride is going to be judges. In this millennial kingdom, God's going to grant unto her judgment, right? Rule with them with rod and iron. So you think about that. Man, if they're unworthy to understand or discern the scriptures upon the actions of men through a church, then I don't think they'll be doing in the millennial kingdom. Definitely not going to be judging angels, whatnot. Not going to be able to, but Dixon.
There's different men lead differently, you know, in a congregation, and I've seen what you've seen. And a couple years ago, we had something, and you know, it was a little messy, and you know, frustrating. And afterwards, a brother didn't say anything, but he called me later and said, "Hey, I just want you to know I really support you and behind you, and you know, I think you were." Doing right, or whatever. I said, "Well, I really appreciate that, but that does the church no good."
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't need to hear it.
Yeah.
I need it. You know, the church needs another man to speak up.
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes that push is like, you know, to be a leader,
mm-hmm.
you have to stand
exactly.
In front.
Exactly. And that's a tough thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's not fun telling a grown man with his own family and
who's trying to do a good thing.
He's trying to do it, and he wants me to know, you know, I'm behind you. And I'm like, you know, I appreciate that. But that does the church no good.
Mm-hmm.
Because the church didn't hear
that. Yep. Yep. It's nice for me to hear it, but,
but
I'm not the one that needs
it.
Need
it. You know, I figured this out a long time ago.
Yeah.
I got nowhere else to go.
Exactly. So. Exactly. 1 Corinthians 12. Did someone else have a hand up?
Well, that's some of the stuff that you fight, too. That, you know, there's a stigma out there about that preacher rule.
Mm-hmm.
And so you make it evident that it's not preacher rule. The church, under the headship of Christ.
Yep.
And then they look to you and say, you got to
do
it.
Yeah.
No, we don't do that.
Yep.
You know,
exactly. Exactly. 1 Corinthians 12. Verse 28, God has set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversity of tongues. Ephesians 4, verse 11, he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Next one I want to look at, you know, the Lord speaks of that teacher. And so when he uses, you know, this word in a strong 13:20, whatever. It really is often translated as master, right? You can go back through, and when they talk to Jesus, you know, good master, talking about that teacher. And so what we see here, as again, it mostly talks about Christ, but as the under shepherd, it is that it speaks of that instructor, right? The one who does provide the example. Right? It's not just in word. But the example, right? How many times did Paul say that? As he have for an example, right? To follow him or follow others as he have that example. So that office is an office of that teacher. Both in word, right? We have that. Feed the flock. Preach the word. Be in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering doctrine. But then also example. By doing the work. Right? A pastor who doesn't do the work, he just preaches about the work. Or instructs people to do the work, because I'm the pastor, I don't have to do the work, all I do is teach you. That's not what the Bible says. That being a teacher, being an instructor, is both in word and in deed. Mm-hmm. Right? And that is a responsibility, a heavy responsibility. You know, and sometimes the pastor may do a lot of the work. All right, physical work. Other times, you know, maybe some of the brethren do get in there and they learn, and so the labor becomes less tense or intensified. He doesn't have to do as much of the work. But no matter what, he has to lead in it. Right? You don't just stand up there and tell the people what to do. You have to also show them, right? Because they lead and they follow, I guess, by that example. And that you look at Christ, everything he taught, he did. And he was diligent at it. He never told his church to do anything that he wouldn't do and didn't do continually. And that has to be also that work of the pastor as teacher, instructor. Acts 13:1 talks about the, you know, those that were in the church, and it speaks of teachers, and that's speaking about that. Those who were not just, you know, we have the office of, we elect teachers, right, in our churches to fill out Sunday school classes. And so hopefully, I know we missed it, and usually this time we do election of officers. We didn't do it. We're going to do it this Wednesday. But normally I'll preach on it a couple times before that, what the Lord requires in stewards, right, and what it means to be put in a position of an office and to fulfill it in a godly manner. And it's just not what, well, I know the doctrines and I can teach them clearly, but what about the manner of individual that you are? What are you teaching, right? Because you can be sound on the doctrines, and I have confidence you're going to teach them right down the line. But if I know your example is that, you know, you preach and teach great, but you live this way at home, and this is your manner of life, what do I know your students also are going to see? And so is that a help or a hindrance to that body, or to that class, or to that flock? Right, you begin to see then that just gives them ammunition, a reason not to listen, reason not to follow. Well, that's very true of a pastor as well. That pastor has to be one who not only preaches and teaches, but then by example, he lives that manner of life before them. He's not going to be perfect, right? We better understand that, but to the best of that ability, he's going to try and lead by example as much as he does through the teaching of the word. In 13 verse number 1, it says, there were in the church that were at Antioch certain prophets, teachers, as Barnabas, Simeon, that was called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene, and Manaen, which had brought up with Herod the tetrarch and Saul. So what do you think he meant there by teachers? They held the office of teachers in this church here at Antioch. What do you think it meant? What do you think it described in them? Teachers.
Time mentors and guides.
Yeah, word and deed, right? They literally were individuals that could be followed. Their doctrine was sound, and their manner of life was sound. They were teachers, and sound in their teaching. It wasn't just that they had great ability to speak and knew the doctrine. So combine those together, man, you can speak well, you know the doctrines, and so you're a great teacher. But what about the manner of life? It's all of that, right? That has to, and that's what these individuals were. They were great teachers. And that pastor, was one of the qualifications? Apt to what?
Teach.
And we just focus on what? The ability to bring a lesson, the ability to be heard and understood. But apt to teach is more than that. Apt to teach is, can somebody believe you?
Lead by example.
Right? So, we go to the really extreme case. Was Lot apt to teach? Right? Well, was his message wrong? Do you think he was just, you think he stuttered a lot so they didn't understand him? So what was it about Lot that made him a bad teacher? Yeah, his lifestyle. He wasn't one that could follow. His teaching and preaching right there didn't match up with his lifestyle, and they discounted him. Right? I don't need to listen to you. I've seen your life. I've seen what was important to you. And now, because, you know, your priorities change, you want my priorities change. Well, life doesn't work that way. So a teacher is literally, you know, apt to teach is one that when you speak, that it's not just discounted. They just don't throw it away. Now, men can do that for a lot of reasons, right? They were, right, told Timothy, let no man despise thee for thy youth. Just because somebody's young doesn't mean, some people it may mean I don't need to listen to you. But that's why your manner of life is so important. Don't give them reason because of the manner of life that you live, so to speak.
Well, in that same verse in 1 Timothy, it says, in word, in conversation.
Yep.
Right after in word, it was his conduct. So
yep.
same exact thing. Timothy was told, as a leader, be an example, not only in the words you say, but right along with that, in the conduct that you do, because people do look for that. And
mm-hmm.
you shouldn't be giving people excuses. People make excuses, but if you're giving them a clear excuse, well, you say it, but you don't follow it, then that's a reason for somebody just to stop listening to you. And then you say, well, I told you what to do. Well, if you can't live it for yourself and you don't want to follow it yourself, how do you expect anybody else to, one, take you seriously, or two, follow that? Because
mm-hmm.
you're saying it and you're not even willing to follow it yourself.
Yep, exactly. So go to 2 Timothy 1. And think of it this way. Because even though it talks, this verse describes, well, this is, of course, this is work. All these words describe an aspect of what Paul's talking about here. 2 Timothy 1, verse 11. Whereunto I am appointed a preacher and an apostle and a teacher of the Gentiles. Right? This is the different aspects of his work with these Gentiles. And so when we look at that, we have to think about and relate that to, man, the different aspects of my responsibility as the bishop, right? It's not just one folder. It's not just a couple of things. All of these words are descriptions of who I am to be and what you ought to see as what that pastor, right? A preacher, which we haven't got to. We'll get to that probably tomorrow morning. Apostle, we know that, done away with. And teacher, one we'll kind of look at here. But those are all works that... distinctive works within the God call, right? Within that responsibility God has given him. So we have to look at these titles and think, okay, in this aspect, this is kind of what this teaches me about being a bishop, right? Whether it's that under-shepherd or whether it's the pastor, whether it is that elder, these are all things I got to focus on and think about, right? That, man, it's not just getting up and preaching and having a good voice, learning how to speak, learning how to put lessons together. There's a lot to this being a pastor. And it's, man, if being a bishop is, you know, a 2-day-a-week job, then you're not a bishop, right? What are you? If it's a 2-day-a-week job, what are you?
Hireling.
You're a hireling. The Bible speaks about that very clearly. He describes what you are. You're a hireling. That's not the office of a bishop. And so you better take seriously this work, right? And know that the Lord does. And you and I will answer for those things. All right, any other questions, comments? I don't want to get into the next one. We'll start tomorrow morning with preacher and look at that aspect. All right, not let's stand.